And warm welcome to Margaret Gilbert, who has joined us in studio. Good to see you, Margaret.
Good to see you, Deirdre. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And we might kick off this month, and I think it's a nice one to talk about. You want to talk a little bit about two things: parental self-care, first of all, and the importance of play for both child and parent, which are great topics. Talk to me about parental self-care. I think of that expression that you hear on phone or on aeroplanes about putting on your own life jacket first.
Yes, yes, your own oxygen mask goes on first. I suppose, you know, I'm just come from a parenting group this morning, and we did a big discussion around parenting is not the easiest task in the world, and there's no manual for it. And we get the new baby and we go home and we plough into it and do the best we can and things. So often parents lose themselves, their own identity, their own sense of being. It gets all tied up in the family and all tied up in the children. And there's often no boundaries between that. The parent is always on tap, on demand for the child. Now, we do need attuned parents, but we also need parents to recognise they need to take good care of themselves, because parenting is a marathon, not a sprint. And it isn't easy if we don't keep filling our own cup up and looking after ourselves. Then when times get challenging, we're less able to parent them the way we'd like to parent them. We all want to be calm, regulated, cool, helpful, supportive parents. But if we're overstretched ourselves, it's not easy to do that. Other people demanding of us all the time. And I suppose parents are under tremendous pressure now, because most families, you have two parents working. They're trying to maintain a house. They're trying to help elderly relatives. There's a huge thing in society where children are taken out to so many activities. It's running and racing from one place to another. You have different children in different schools and things. So in the busyness of all that, the parents' own well-being, their own mental health and sense of themselves can get very, very lost. So it's very much about, we also need to role model for our children boundaries that, yeah, I'm here at times to help and support you and do a lot for you, but I can also put in the boundary where I say, no, it's me time. I'd often say to parents, even a stay-at-home parent often has the impression that they have to do everything for their children because that's what they've stayed home to do. But a stay-at-home parent can lie in the couch and put their legs up on the table if they want, the coffee table, and relax and enjoy that time, go out walking, enjoy nature and things. Just because you're at home doesn't mean to say you have to be doing everything for the children, even in their absence. And we need children for stay-at-home parents, for those children to be independent as well. That they come home and they learn some days there isn't a dinner on the table. Sometimes they have to search the fridge to see what to eat next, that they help around the house, and, you know, that they learn to get their lunch ready and clean up after them and things. So parents tend to neglect themselves. And we're living in a society where anxiety is huge in everybody. Even the protests over the last 2 weeks around the fuel prices, cost of living, all that kind of thing. It's ongoing with the Ukraine war. We had COVID. We have America's in a very different state of being. It has thrown the whole world upside down. International law has changed, all that kind of thing. So we're very dysregulated. And then we're trying to parent children that now more than ever, they're coming up with things around anxiety, school avoidance, neurodivergence, and we're supposed to be calm, regulated and supportive for them. But if we're not available to ourselves first, it's very, very hard then to do that for the children.
I think the problem for a lot of working mothers, Margaret, and certainly I felt like this when my daughter was small, is that if you're handing them over to somebody else 5 days a week while you go to work, you kind of feel then on Saturday and Sunday that you need to be with them all the time. And, you know, if you go out with your friends or go out with your partner or whatever, you kind of feel, I shouldn't be doing this because I'm already handing them over 5 days a week. But in actual fact, you'd probably go mad if you didn't get your own bit of...
Absolutely.
Diversion.
Absolutely. So it erodes it ourselves. I suppose what you have said there really comes back to the feeling of guilt. if we're out all week and they are with other carers and things, either in Christian schools or wherever they are, we have that guilt. And we do get that sense that we want to be with them all day, every day. But it's quality time with children that matters. So it's that when we come home in the evening and they're coming in from work and things, instead of being so worried about schoolwork, about clean house, all these things has to be done, it's 10 or 15 minutes of positive, reflective listening, meaningful communication with the child that matters. We can be with them all day Saturday and all day Sunday, but if we're exhausted and if we're drained and if we're in survival mode, just get through the day, get through the day, not really enjoying it, because sometimes we're approaching it almost like it's a big job, it's a job that has to be done. They're our nearest and our dearest. So what they need over that Saturday and Sunday is pockets of meaningful interaction. So I put in there, when we looked at self-care, the importance of fun. I think what has happened a lot between parents and children is now there's no fun, there's no crack, there's no enjoyment.
There's no time for it.
There's no time for it. Everything has got really, really serious. And it's all focused on how they get on in life, and it goes on to school.
Their activities.
And so, like, meaningful connection is enjoying being with them, even if it's for short periods of time. You kind of have the 7-7-7 rule. If we can get 7 meaningful connecting moments, maybe in the morning, 7 in the afternoon, 7 late at night. Now, I know working parents may not be able to get that all in, but it's amazing how children's behaviour changes and how they come with us if they have that meaningful connecting time. And it's one of the hardest things I think we find now in society to do is actually stop the overthinking, stop the lecturing, stop the talking, and actually lean into silences and hear what the children have to say. We'd say we hear them, but we run away straight away to try and fix it. If they're talking about a friend at school, a row, the head or whatever, then we say, can't you go back tomorrow? Can't you say this and can't you do this? Or did you tell the teacher? But actually, all they want us is to help them make sense of it in their head. We have to sit with them, do you know, and just have that meaningful conversation. I hear you. You've had a tough day at school today. You had a row with your friends and things hadn't gone very well for you. How did you take care of yourself?
And sometimes perhaps it's just the physically being with them. There was a very interesting, you know, in one of these problem pages in one of the papers earlier this week, it might have been the Irish Independent, and it was a working mom, and she was saying, I feel so guilty that some evenings when I come home, I'm too tired to play with my child. And the answer from whoever it was that sometimes the child just needs you to be sitting beside them on the couch while they watch cartoons, and you don't have to do anything, but just being with them.
Yes, yes. So you're 100% right, because that's called parental presence. If you're there alongside that little child watching a video with them, that's real meaningful connecting time. But if you're sitting there with them and you're on the phone, you're texting, you're messaging, you're in and out, up and down and running around the place, that's not presence. There's a big difference between being mentally present, as in calm. Silence is a connecting language and we don't like it. So a tired parent coming, sitting on a couch and saying to a young child, first of all, they're quite entitled to say, lads, I'm exhausted after a long day, so I'm going to take a 20-minute break to recharge my battery so I can play with you in 20 minutes' time. So you can say to a child, you can play around here. I remember when my younger ones were young, doctors and nurses was great, because you could lie up on the couch, put out the two arms and the leg, and they'd be wrapping bandages on you, and they'd be checking and telling you go away to sleep for a while. You know, but I didn't have to be talking. Only when they told me roll over, I rolled over. When they told me...
You were always the patient,
yeah,
were you?
I was always the patient. Oh, you wouldn't be left be the doctor.
I love it.
But it was connecting, because I wasn't talking. It was child-led play. They told me who I was, what was sore, what parts of me, what kind of an accident I was after having. And they would be, I'm the doctor, I'm the nurse. And, you know, they're role-playing all this out. But I used to be exhausted. I used to work a lot of nights, you know, in shippers and bars and that kind of thing. I used to be very tired, like, but it was great. Doctors and nurses and sit down.
Can't beat it.
Can't beat it. And they loved it.
Listen, before we go to break, because I just want to come back to something you said there, because in case I forget, you were talking there about the parents sitting down and being with them, but not being on their phones. And, you know, it's so important, because I think we're great, and I have a teenager, we're great for lecturing kids about not being on their phones, but we're the worst role models ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It is addictive. It is addictive, scrolling on phones and things, and we're contactable 24/7 nowadays. You know, and if we can't role model putting down the phone, when we lecture children, they're laughing at us in their own brains. They're intelligent beings. We're telling them, don't be on your phone, it's bad for you, this, that, the other. And there we are, scrolling away. Now, I can just say, when our children were young, it was great because the phones didn't have the internet, didn't they? So it wasn't a problem in our time. But I know I love scrolling.
I do,
and
too.
I know it's lovely. And I know I'd probably be very challenged if I had my children now. I'd probably be the nurse in the bed or the patient in the bed using the phone while I'd
you
be.
Would.
But
yeah,
we've to consciously decide what values do we want to instill in them. If we want them to be able to manage their mental health and stay off the phone and things, we've to role model that for them.
Exactly. Well, listen, we'll just ask the listeners maybe if there's one takeaway from what Margaret just said there. Just the whole idea of if with your kids, don't be really with them. Don't be on the phone. Even if you only have a half an hour to spare, just put away the phone and give them your full attention. We're going to take a break. We have some questions in for Margaret, but there's room for a few more if you would like to get in touch. 083-300-3300 or phone us on 066-7123-666, and we'll be back with more parenting.
Parenting advice on Talkabout.
Now, Margaret, let's come along to some questions. And funnily enough, the first two we've got are about sleep. This one has just come in the last while. Caller's daughter has an 11-month-old girl.
Yes.
Will not go to sleep in the cot or go to sleep by herself. They pick her up within the hour and then she sleeps in the bed with them for the night. That sounds frighteningly familiar, I have to say.
And I suppose, do you know, it's a stage of life when we want our children to sleep and we want them to fit into that clock where you go to bed at 8 or 9, you get up. Some babies just won't fit into it. Some babies. So we never let a baby cry themselves for an hour or two after sleep.
Which used to be the advice back in the days.
We'd never ever do that because all they do is burn themselves out with exhaustion. Their little baby, for whatever reason, needs a good bit of contact with them. So I'd be nourishing that. For whatever reason, that baby doesn't want to go down. Now, if it's the first baby, it might that we have given it too fond of being up the arms and things. But to me, that baby is seeking contact with the parents. They're not quite happy to go down and settle themselves by night. I'd 3 of them and none of them slept by night. None of them.
Really?
Absolutely none of them. They all know our middle one had congenital hips, so she was in plasters a lot. So it was uncomfortableness. But none of the 3 of them slept a night, but trying to push them into these structure and routines and all this kind of thing, it's not for every baby. So what I'd say to that baby is, you know, it can be hard if you're trying to go to bed at night and you can't settle the baby and all that kind of thing. Get a little bit of help. Maybe each parent stay up a night if there's 2 parents there or what have you. And hold that little baby close and see, can it get enough of you to see if it'll settle down. And like she's doing, taking the little baby into the bed. Maybe that's what the child needs. Now, I'm saying that carefully because you've all this advice about close sleeping and all that. So you know what I mean? No, but I want you to take all those precautions that the baby's not going to overheat and all that kind of thing. It's nurturing. That baby wants something from the parent and they're being attuned to them. Some parents would say, oh, they're learning to get their own way at a very young age. They're not. they can't verbalise or vocalise what's going on for them, so they're doing it through behavioural means. So I'd nourish that little child. Don't be trying to force it into a set structure. But if it will sleep next to her and close to them, I'd continue that.
We also have, this is the other end of the scale, a 14-year-old. Now, I don't know whether this is a boy or a girl, but this person just said, my 14-year-old is still afraid of the dark and sleeps with a light on. What can I do about it?
Yeah.
A load of kids are afraid of the dark.
They are. But I suppose at the end of the day, if that young fella is sleeping in his room, right, and he can sleep as an adult for the next 50 years with the light on if he wants, I wouldn't see it as a problem because it's not stopping him of functioning. Now, if he was refusing to get out and go to the bathroom, or if, you know, he was running around the house all night, lots of people get comfort from a light on. And it's something that isn't going to hold him back in life. Lots of people sleep with it on. So to me, it isn't a major problem. Unless alone there's a lot of other anxiety things around it. If he's afraid to go out the back door, if he's afraid to go down into the back kitchen and things, then I'd be saying there's a lot more around anxiety than just actually being afraid of the dark. So to me, if there's no other problems, I'd let him alone. If he wants a light, get one that suits the whole house, that's low enough to light up his room but not disturb others and things.
Yeah, you can get these lights that have a kind of a dimmer on them and they gradually become darker and darker. So that might be something to look into.
Yeah.
A listener says, I have a 9-year-old girl who recently was not invited to the birthday party of one of the girls in her class. She's very upset about this as she was quite friendly with the other girl. What can I do?
Yes.
That's a common one as well.
It is. And I wonder what age would that child be, an indicator in that?
Sorry, nine.
Nine. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. You see, there's two sides to things, and it's really, really hard when our children are left out and they have to deal with it. But the other side of it is children are allowed to invite who they want as well. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes we're not chosen to go to these things, but you also have cliques and gangs that young girl, although might be friendly with her on some occasions, she might be trying to fit into other gangs and groups and all that kind of thing. So when we have a child that's left out and really, really upset over it, our power is in being able to sit with them and talk it through with them. That's heartbreaking for a parent. It doesn't say the child has any challenges around neurodivergence or anything there, but children not quite fitting in is a big problem now in schools and in places. So with that child, it's being able to hear her. I can understand why you're so upset. We're listening to the child. Tell us how you feel about it. You know, what's the hardest part about it? This might sound kind of a little stupid, but it's actually not. What the child needs from a parent there is to connect with her feelings, her pain around this. Not to try and fix it, not to try and sort it, but say to her, that's really, really difficult for you. And I know it's difficult for you because in some places she'll talk away to you and other places she won't talk to you. So I'd be saying to that child, what do you think is going on for that other girl? We're getting her to begin to think. What we want her to know, it isn't her that's the challenge, it's the other girl that's making these choices and things. So we'd be saying to her, what do you think the other girl might be thinking? Why do you think she might be let out? And we'll try and get the young person to begin to look at the dynamics of groups. They are horrendous, but they're there and we can't prevent them.
We can't avoid them, yeah. And it's probably a good life lesson as well going forward.
It is.
That not every, you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea.
Absolutely. Yeah. But don't dismiss them and say, you shouldn't feel that way. All we, you know, don't mind her.
Validate the feeling
and stay with it and be able to say to her, well, you know, when it comes to your party, you'll have choices. You can choose to invite her or not, but you honour yourself.
I'm just going to squeeze one more in, because this is an unusual one that came in by email earlier. This is a mom who says, I was told by a friend of mine that I hug my six-year-old far too much and it's going to make her too clingy. What does Margaret think?
Well, a child needs loads of hugs from a parent, but the only thing we have to look at is it impacting other areas of the child's life. So if that child skips happily out into preschool, skips happily out into primary school, goes away down and plays with her friends and will go out and do all the developmental stages for her age, keep hugging her. Keep hugging her. But if it's surrounding kind of an anxiety where the child is continuously seeking security, hates leaving mom to go to the places that they should be going, like play parties, going to preschool, going to crèches, then we need to look at it in what function is the behaviour serving. But if it's not impacting other areas of the life, it's what the child needs.
Yeah, exactly. Go with it. Margaret, we're going to have to let you go, but remind people how they can contact you, because I know that you're always there if any parents need any help or they can make an appointment with you.
Lovely. Margaret Gilbert, lifecoaching.com. And I suppose I've put up now over the next few days a good few workshops and coaching sessions and things that will be going on over the next 3 or 4 weeks if people want to look at that.
Margaret Gilbert Coaching.
Lifecoaching.com.
Margaret Gilbert Lifecoaching.com. Excellent, if people want to find out more. Margaret, thank you so much for that.
Thank you too, dear.
Great to have you as always. We'll see you again in May, all going well. Just some important